Okay. Hello and welcome to We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Saylette.
And this is Kalina.
And we're a podcast who reads and reviews romance novels. Thanks for joining us, you guys. I sound like a cartoon there. Sorry.
A little bit. You got a little cartoony.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to just get into our thing and do shit.
Should I do a quickie?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. What video game or online game or game that I don't understand do you do you enjoy when you're having a bad day or that makes you feel better?
I love video games. For those of you that are returning and know who I am. And I love role-playing games. The RPGs are a ton of fun. But World of Warcraft is probably my most favorite if we're going to talk about RPG. I love it. But I like the non-aggressive realms where you don't get to just like go and attack and kill people because I'm a very passive player. But I love those. And I like regular video games and stuff too, you know, like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, a lot of those. I love the Alice games. I even like regular PC games that you can play on there on your laptop and stuff as well. So, but if I had to choose a game to stick with and invest in and put money towards and actually learn how to play better, it would be World of Warcraft. And yes, I would be part of the Horde. I am not an Alliance member for all of you haters out there. Just saying.
I don't understand any of that. I couldn't tell you the last time I played a video game. I do know the last one I liked and actually worked all the way through to the end, with help, of course, not on my own, was Left 4 Dead.
Okay.
Which was zombies.
Yeah.
And I know it was easier for me because of the way I could see my character. I think that was one where I watched my character's back.
Okay.
And moved. Yeah. Whereas I tried really hard to get into BioShock because I loved the visuals when I watched other people play it. An old partner used to play it. And it's one of my favorite looking games.
Okay.
But I could not fit, like, the gameplay, the character maneuvering. It was the most frustrating I've ever been.
Was it first person view?
I don't understand those, the difference, but I think so. It's one where you only see, I think, like your hands or your gun.
Yeah.
And I couldn't fucking figure any of that out. Like, the character never did what I wanted the character to do. And I was like, this is so fucking hard. But I think why I like Left 4 Dead, because I watched the character. It's more like the old school Mario, which is what I grew up on, because that's how old we are, where you are maneuvering the character through
life.
You're
moving the character. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I can't play a lot of, like, those handheld games not handheld, but, like, COD and stuff on your phones, because it's just the gun. All you could see is the hand and the gun, and I can't maneuver those either. I need to see the back of the character.
Yeah, so that's really where I stopped being interested in video games, because I think I have a very low rage quit point. It's like 5 minutes in, and then I'm like,
fuck it.
I have a book that doesn't do this to me, so I don't need this shenanigans in my life.
Oh my God. And
I will rage quit really fast.
Oh man, I used to spend hours. I mean, like, I'm up late still, but now I'm up late reading or playing, like, phone games, not like these kind of games or anything like that.
No, the Bejeweled of the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yes. Stuff like that.
Magic things, words with magic, friends.
Yes, like puzzles, right?
Puzzle games.
I mean, I got myself a subscription back for World of Warcraft with Blizzard I think sometime last year, because I was like, I'm getting back into this. I got my degree. I have no more school. I've got shit. And then, you know.
Life happened.
Life happens. And I don't get to do that anymore. And then they change it on you. Things change. Like, you can't go to 120 anymore. Now it's back to like 80. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of crazy. And, you know, you have to relearn how to spec your character and all of this stuff. And they take stuff away and they give it back. And then, it's just all sorts of fun stuff. But I imagine you were pretty confused during some of the parts of this book.
Oh, there's whole sections where I was like, I wonder if I'd get this if I could see it.
It's all of the like abbreviations and different vernacular that they use within video games.
Oh, I didn't understand fucking any of it. I was just like, and also like the, I think the way it was laid out too, obviously because it's a text chat.
Yes.
So it's different like name handles and then mm-hmm. what they say back and forth. That plays really poorly in audio.
Yes.
That is like something you could read through on a page pretty quickly.
Reading is better. Because
you don't actually need to read out everybody's handle the whole time. Your brain would just know the difference. Right?
Exactly.
But in audio, the narrator has to do it. So she's constantly saying, bog witch.
Yeah.
Otter. Bog witch. Otter. And it just sounds weird in audio. It's like hard to follow. It's just like, this is annoying. And then they're saying things about things that I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's all to say, guys, that we read Role Playing by Kathy Yardley, narrated by Elise Din and Chris Brinkley. And it's exciting. I really liked this one. Anything about people in their 40s playing online video games with each other, making friends, I'm fucking for it.
You know, I love the introverts. I love the hermitness of the characters. I felt very attached, even though I don't play the games. I was like, the rest of these people's personalities are matching up with mine. I get
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. There's a point in this book, Maggie, who's Bogwitch, the main character, says, fuck this social shit. And I was like, fuck yes. Yeah. She is my favorite person.
She walks out on a party after 20 yes. minutes and goes home. And I'm like,
it's great.
That's
it's
the best.
Fucking great.
She just straight doesn't even say goodbye. Just pieces nope. out of that bitch.
Grabs her jacket and fucking bolts.
It's Those people great. Suck. They had every You have every yeah. right to leave a party.
Absolutely.
Everybody at the party sucks.
Everybody sucked at that party. But hey, do you want to Clitz Notes us before
yes.
we get deep down into
before
it?
Where we're just like rage yelling about characters yes. that nobody knows because I haven't told them about the book yet.
Right.
Okay. So we're in a very small town, something Falls, that I don't remember the whole name of.
They eventually just say Falls.
Yeah, whatever. it's in Eastern Washington. So like kind of near the border, you know, rural area, small town vibes, whatever. Maggie, also known as Bogwitch, her online handle, is a 48-year-old mother who, like, divorcee. Her son has left for college this year. So he's like 18 and he's gone off to school, I think, on the western side of Washington. There's a lot of like west side, east side, because this is definitely.
Okay.
I think he, I was saying he went to Seattle. In my head, he went to Seattle.
I was gonna say he was in state. So yeah, we were saying the same thing.
Yes. Yeah. He stayed okay. in state. He just went. So, because there's a Washington school on the west side, and then he didn't go to that one. He went to the east side one. Or on the east side, he went to the west side one. Anyway, it's, you know, I think it's more relevant to people who live in Washington. They pick up yeah. on the vocabulary better, because I think that's probably how people in the state of Washington refer to the different areas of the state. Oh, you're an east sider. Oh, you're a west sider.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, he's left for school. She's been divorced about 5 years from her husband, who's out of state now. He's in Wyoming, and was really shitty person. And she works from home and lives by herself, you know, outside of her son, who's now left. And so she really doesn't have any reason to be all that social. And so she tries to avoid the people of the small town as much as she can. But, you know, she runs into somebody at a grocery store and gets dragged to like a book club and then a football party, whatever. She's getting periodically talked into going to these events. She's also trying to set a better example for her son, Kit. She was afraid that he wasn't getting the full college experience, because when they talked, it didn't sound like he was making friends. I mean, he'd been there like 2 weeks at that point, and I'm like, nobody's made friends yet. Even the fucking extroverts haven't made friends yet. They just don't realize that.
Yeah.
It's been 2 fucking weeks. But anyway, so she tries to make a deal with him that if she gets more social, then he will go out and try at college. So she's trying. She's putting on an effort, you know. And then there's Aiden, who is a 50-year-old man who lives in the same town. He is trying to help his mother. She's elderly and she needs some help around the house. She's had some falling incidents. She's struggling with probably driving. She shouldn't be driving. He had come home. He'd moved home after having a successful Hospice, thank you. A successful hospice business in the western part of the state. He sold his business and moved home because his dad had cancer and he helped him through the end of his life. But then he stayed on because his mom was obviously experiencing some decline as well, even though she doesn't want to admit it. So he's in town. He doesn't have any work. He's financially fine because of his business. And so he doesn't have to work. So he takes college courses, local community college classes, and he ends up in a online game. He's the guild leader.
Yes.
Okay. I'm like, I don't know.
You got it.
And one of the somebody anyway, she Maggie ends up getting the name of this guild to join through her that one bad book club incident. And so she joins the guild, and because he was given the name by his mom, church from his, it came through his mom's church group, he assumed it was a lady as old as his mom. He was told she was a shut-in and she needed to make friends and she liked video games. So he let her join the video game. So he's assuming she's 80. All she knows is that this is a group of people from the community college running a guild. So her assumption is that they're all 20. So she joins this guild. They talk. They have fun. She really likes the otter, who's the owner. That's Aiden. He's known as Otter.
The Otter.
Not the owner, whatever the fuck, the guild president. I don't know.
No, this is good. I'm enjoying this.
Thank you. And she doesn't, you know, some of the other characters are a bit, you know, punky and young, obviously.
I mean, they really are probably 20 years old
or
14.
But he's easy to talk to. And so she's built up more of a rapport with him. They have outside of guild interaction conversations where they start texting and like watching movies together and, you know, enjoying each other. But they're still, she's like definitely kind of falling for him, but she's like, he's 18. Stop it. I'm not even going to help. You know, I'm not going to see him. It's fine. He breaks his foot. She is talking to him and he's like, I can't do that. I have, you know, I broke my foot. I don't think, whatever. He asks her to like run a op with the guild one day. And he admits it's because he broke his foot. So she offers to come over and give him lunch. And she shows up at his house and is all like, oh, God, why am I doing that? Like, it's a much nicer house than like an 18, 20-year-old should have. Like, it's a full-blown adult house. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this is weird. And then she gets convinced that she's going to get murdered. And then he comes down the stairs and he's a fucking 50-year-old man and not a child. So she doesn't know who he is. And he's, meanwhile, his mind is boggled because this is not an 80-year-old woman standing in his kitchen. It's a 48-year-old woman. So they're both shocked and like a little bit confused. And like, it's a funny story. They laugh. They get over it. They still have a really good rapport. They hang out. They talk. Everything's great. She keeps helping him out pretty much the whole week couple of weeks that he's in that air cast with his foot. Mm-hmm. She's helping him. She's getting groceries with him. She's helping him cook because he also doesn't. He mostly goes out to eat and he can't drive right now. So she's teaching him how to cook. She's showing him food options, all of it. So it's cute. They're figuring it out. They've both set very firm boundaries that this is not romantic, though. They will only be friends.
Yeah.
Because she is like not dating. And he's like, I'm not dating either. Mm-hmm. And they're like, nobody's dating.
You're just my best friend now.
And as the readers were going, oh my God, you guys are dating. Because they're very obviously dating. This is definitely dating.
They're totally fucking dating.
Meanwhile, there's this wedding at the end that he has to get a date for. It's a family wedding. It's like his cousin or something. And mom wants him to have a date because their family drama is Aiden's ex-girlfriend, his high school girlfriend, and then later after college girlfriend for a number of years. In fact, all the way to fiance. Her name is Cheryl. They broke up. And when they broke up, she started dating his younger brother, Davey, and got married to him and now has kids. So Davey and Cheryl, it's been 10 years. They've been married. They have children. But for some reason, the family just can't seem to get over the fact that Cheryl was with Aiden first and is now with Davey. And Aiden's never been with anyone since. Nobody in the family has ever seen him. He's never brought a date to any event. His mom's like, you have to have a date for this wedding. Everybody will keep talking. And he's like, I really just don't care if people talk. But she cares. And so he decides to use a little bit of leverage. And he goes, if I bring a date, then we have to talk about end of life stuff. Because she hasn't signed a durable medical power of attorney. She doesn't have a will. She wants to keep driving. He keeps putting her off by telling her the car is broken. It's not broken. He's just not letting her drive it. Anyway, she doesn't want to do any of that stuff. She's like, I'm an adult. I can do what I want. I don't have to listen to you. Blech. And she also doesn't like her son very much. We'll figure that out later. And he's like, well, if I bring a date to the wedding, then we have to talk about that. And she's like, fine, bring a date and we'll talk. So naturally, there's another single, recently divorced lady in town named Deb, who is part of the church group and part of the book club and part of the Bible studies and part of the football watching committee and all of this. And she is really interested in Aiden.
And she wants to bone.
She wants to bone into marriage and have another marriage.
Yes, that's what she needs. And that's what she wants.
Aiden's mom is like, you should date Deb. And he's like, I don't want to date Deb. Nobody wants to date Deb. Anyway, she's very pushy. She's that small town kind of like intrusive where she shows up. He's shot her down a number of times. And she just shows up one day and throws a party at his house because his foot's broken. So he can't come to anybody else's party. So she brings everyone to his house for a party without asking.
Yep.
Like multiple people.
Oh, I'd be so pissed.
I would not have opened the door to anyone else. I would have been like, no, I am not having a football party in my house. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, so that's Deb. She is... What? Okay. Anyway, long story short, they're definitely interested in each other, but it all starts to kind of come out because they can finally talk to each other. Like, this is the person both of them have been needing in their lives because they haven't had anyone to really have these discussions with before. So stuff that has been bottled up for a long time is coming out from both of them. And Aiden finally admits that to Maggie that he's only been in two relationships in his life, one with Cheryl and one in college with a man named Jordan. And so she's like, oh, so you're bi. And he's like, I don't know. And then she goes into she explains demisexual to him, like maybe because he's not attracted most of the time. Like he just isn't attracted to people. And only after becoming friends with someone does he realize an attraction. It kind of like sneaks up on him. And that sounds a lot like demisexual. And so she tries to explain that. And she's like, I'm not an expert or anything, so you're going to have to do your own research. And this is one of those kind moments where do your own research is not a terrible, horrible excuse for not believing in science. Usually if someone tells you they did their own research, it's not a good sign. But this one's not that bad. So he looks it up and finally has a name to something he's felt his whole life and never known. He's never understood why he just doesn't feel that attraction, like that instant. He doesn't want to have sex. He doesn't want to have like hookups. He doesn't want to just meet someone at a bar and go home with them. He's not attracted that way.
Right.
Anyway, so the wedding comes around. At first, he doesn't have anyone. He didn't bring Maggie. She decided once they had that talk, she was falling in love with him and being attracted to him. And that wasn't fair because she just learned all this stuff about him and how he's not attracted to people. So he's like, well, I'm not going to be that person. So she's trying to kind of tamp down her own crush. She's calling it a crush. And she's going, all right, I'm not going to feel this crush and we can still be friends. And so she didn't want to go to the wedding with him because it sounded kind of datey. And if you're having a crush on somebody, well, it's probably smart to avoid that kind of situation. Yeah. But he eventually calls her from the wedding and is like info dumping the entire like tragedy that is his mom. His mom sucks. Oh my God. So she had heard about the guy from college. So she assumes he's gay. Everyone just assumes he's gay and trying to cover it. And so that's why they want him to show up with a woman at this event. And so Cheryl's being a real bitch. His mom's being a real bitch. And now she goes, well, you didn't bring a date. So I won our bet and I don't have to talk about medical power of attorney or end of life stuff at all. And you have to give me back my car and I get to do what I want. And he's just like, so stupid, right? Because and like Aiden's brother Davey isn't really backing him up. Cheryl and Davey don't live in town. They live in Spokane, which is a bit farther away, and so they're never around to deal with this shit like he is. Like when she falls and needs, you know, to be hospitalized, or when she hits multiple things while driving. Like she's run into three things in three separate occasions. That's why he took the car away. Whatever. So he talks to Maggie. She finds out all about everything that's going on and what everybody's doing. And she's like, I'm showing up at that wedding. And so she shows up the next day for the actual wedding because all that happened at the rehearsal dinner. At first, everyone's being kind of cool. They're trying to be cool. They're not that cool, but they're trying. And she's talking. She's being very like un-Maggie-like because Maggie's very harsh and no fucks given anymore.
No bullshit.
She put up with a lot in her marriage and like bending herself to other people's whims. And she, as soon as the marriage was over, she's like, fuck that. I now am going to be
myself. No apologies.
Not doing it. And so she's trying really hard and she's being very polite and very nice. And then Cheryl just fucking unloads on Maggie that, well, has he told you he's gay? And all this shit because she sucks as a person. She's literally the worst. And of course, Maggie's just not going to have it. So nope. she not only defends him from all of the accusations and like says, none of this is anybody's business anyway. And you don't get to out him in a public space. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have his consent and you have now done that. And that makes you the fucking problem. Mm-hmm. And also, you've been married for 10 years. Why are you acting like he hurt you yesterday? You know, like all yeah. this shit.
It was good.
It was great. They almost fought, but Aiden stopped her from fighting. Oh, yeah.
Maggie fucking took off her earrings, and she was jumping over the table to beat up this bitch.
This bitch needed a slap.
Bad.
And so they admit to each other they both have feelings. They're both interested. Mm-hmm. They are attracted. They have some sexy times. They want to pursue a relationship. Oh, they love each other. Okay, it's good. Also, there's other shit with her husband. Her ex comes back for a minute and sees him and is
and
up
her son
piece of shit about it. Yeah. And her son's there and da da da. But everybody works it out. He eventually, his mom like cuts him out of the family and is like, you're no son of mine. And he's like, fine. Mm-hmm. I've been tying myself in knots for years feeling like shit and I don't have to do it anymore. So guess what, Davey? Yeah. This family is now your fucking problem.
Yep. That's right.
So, and eventually, like, they're together, they have a great Christmas, and then there's like an epilogue, like a few years later, they've gotten married. I think they're married. It doesn't doesn't matter. Married. They're together and they've moved out of that dumb little town and are in a better place together.
Yep. And it seems like he's getting along with Kit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he and Kit are great and everybody's in a good place. So, well, everybody who deserves to be in a good place is in a good place.
Yeah. I was going to say that I don't think I've ever been in a story or read a story where I truly only liked the main characters. I mean, her friend Rosita was fine, but we didn't get too much with her. With just like a phone conversation
like
every
once
in a while.
Maybe two phone conversations. Because there was the one where she called her and said like, hey, I'm going to, or she texted her like, I'm at this address. I'll text, or we're having a call late at night. But if I miss the call, this is where I am. Basically what I do when I go on dates and I go, guys, I am.
It's a best friend thing. You share your location. You just got to let us know where you are. That's all.
I'm just like, here's the last person I will have been seen with. If I die.
Right.
Get this fucker.
But everybody else really fucking sucked.
Everybody sucked. Every single... This is the weirdest book for that because, yes, usually like the sidekick characters are some of the funniest, some of the best characters in a book. Mm-hmm. And we just love them. And we're like, oh, we hope they get a book or this, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And there's not another person in this book that I want to know anything about. I want them all to suffer a horrible case of chicken pox.
Gonorrhea.
Every single fucking one of them. Even his friend, like, what was his friend's name? Raymond or?
Riley.
Riley. Riley sucked. I mean, he tried. At least he didn't.
I was really afraid.
The coming out better.
Yes. Yeah. That I thought that was going to go way south. I was clenching my fist because I was prepared for it.
Well, especially because his first question was like, are you attracted to me?
Yeah, when he was just like, oh,
and he was just like, no, not with a gun to my head. No. And then Riley's all like, good, wait, I don't know how to feel about that. I'm sad because I'm hot, but I'm also happy that you don't like me.
He was just like a support animal.
He was...
That didn't really support him. He was just his best friend.
He was not helpful for this whole book.
Nobody else was very helpful.
Nobody.
For
they
book.
All sucked.
They it's Maggie like, and Aiden had to find their own way, both of them, with each other.
Everybody. Like, she tried so many times to explain to all of them that she was not interested in date. Like, none of them could see past their own personal situation and interests. Mm-hmm. So Deb is recently divorced. She's one year out, you know, much more recently than like Maggie. Maggie's 5 years, right? And her son, whose name I've forgotten, is Kit's
Harrison.
Friend. Harrison. Okay, Kit and Harrison. So Maggie's son Kit, Deb's son Harrison, they're best friends from high school. They both just graduated. Harrison isn't going to college, so he stayed in town. He just moved in with his girlfriend. But Maggie's son Kit has gone off to college. So Maggie knows that if she's too rude to Deb, it'll get back to Kit. So she's trying to not be like the worst because she wants Kit to see that she's trying. Mm-hmm. But she's sitting there at that like book club and all Deb is talking about is like dating again.
It's just
dating.
Gossip.
And that's fine. Like she's, you know, her whole life was probably devoted to It sounds like, we don't know, but it sounds like she doesn't work. It sounds like she was a mom and a wife, and she went to church. She's a church lady.
Yeah.
And now she's divorced, and that takes like a third of her identity away. She's not a wife anymore. And her son just graduated and moved out of the house. So that actually takes like two thirds of her identity away. You're not a mom. I mean, you are still a mom. Much. You're always a mom, but you're not actively raising an underage child mom.
No, right, like, right. She's an empty nester.
She's empty nesting, and her husband left her.
Yes.
Okay. So she's like, I have to get some of my identity back. And to her, that's going to be jumping into another relationship, trying to find a new husband and being married again. Because mm-hmm. that was her plan for her life anyway. And then fell apart. Right. So I get it. I understand. I'm trying to understand things from her perspective. But every time she's like, well, we could go on dates. Maggie, you could date too. And Maggie's like, I'm not interested in dating. Like, no one would hear that sentence come out of Maggie's mouth.
No.
They just refuse to hear it. And just would be like, yeah,
just wouldn't understand it.
And it's like, just because you want a thing doesn't mean everybody else wants a thing. Like, we don't all have to have the same interests. They would not listen to her. And then Aiden would say the same thing, and just nobody, they would just be like, well, then you should just, like, Riley would just be like, well, then don't date, just have sex. Like, that's all I'm doing. I'm not dating. I don't want to date.
Riley.
I'm a super hot, attractive 50-year-old man, and I don't need to date. I just need to fuck.
Yeah.
He's like, why don't you just fuck? And Aiden's like, I'm just not interested. I don't want to do that.
That's not what I want to do. It's just such a weird thing that these two, like, not Maggie. I mean, Aiden, that is his best friend. He chose Riley to be his best friend, right? Or his good friend or whatever.
He chose him in like high school.
Yeah, yeah.
He somehow is still attached to him.
He's just there, right? But Maggie has chosen not to. I mean, she's an introvert through and through. She chooses not to step outside. She wears her holy pants and her big sweatshirts all day long and doesn't seem like she combs her hair, and she doesn't give a fuck. Like, she doesn't care. And the only reason she's willing to go out and do this is because she wants to set this example for Kit and say, look, if I can do it, you can do it too.
Yeah.
But nobody else is listening to her when she says no. Like, no. At what point do you just keep going? Like, you explain a little bit. You're like, hey, come to this party. It's about this, this, and that. And they're like, no, that's cool. And you're like, are you sure we're going to do this, this, and that? And they're like, no, that's cool. I'm not interested. Then you fucking leave it alone. You walk away and you say, cool, nice to meet you.
So I've decided... That sounded way more dramatic than it's going to be. I fucking love this book. And I think for once, this is the small town that is real. And this is the small town that tells me all the other books where I fascinate about moving to these small towns is bullshit. Because those are fake small towns full of fun people who don't suck. And this is exactly what an actual small town is like. And it's insular. And everyone's in your business. And they all go to church. And if you're the one person in town who doesn't do the same things as everybody else, it's going to be fucking rough.
Yes.
And so I love that she wrote this story, and it's in this kind of town, and it's exactly the kind of town I needed to read about to completely wash away all of my brilliant ideas about like finding a Mystic Bayou or Stars Hollow or whatever that other magical one was that I just was like, yeah, I just want to move there. That town sounds great. And it's just not.
Sounds awesome.
Because it doesn't exist in reality.
This is the real little town that you're going to get when you go live in a mountain town.
Exactly. Sorry. And I would absolutely hate every single one of these motherfuckers. And they would show up just like they did here, and they're like, why don't you come to church with me? Why don't you go to this? And why don't you do that? And I'm gonna be like, I don't want to know you.
Why don't you just understand that? No, like, I'm blatantly telling you no, and I'm not interested. What can't you understand?
Maggie said something very abrasive at book club about not wanting to date, and then like 2 weeks later at the football party they were pushing her again, and I was like, were you all not there for when she basically yelled at you and said, I'm not dating?
Yes.
Now, it's all belied by the fact that they end up dating by the end of the book, but at the moment in time that she said that, she still isn't dating.
Well, and then Deb does sort of try to use that against her when she throws that surprise party at Aiden's house and Maggie shows up to like rescue him because she's like, can fix my internet, it's broken. And then he's like, yeah, I gotta go fix her internet, it's broken, she needs it for work. And she's like, yeah, but she's not dating. It's like, or you don't need the internet right now, do you? Or, you know, whatever.
She says a lot of trendy dumb shit. And, well, the worst was when she cornered him and was like, I understand that you're trying to be nice to him. I've tried to be nice to her too, but she's just such a mess. And you really don't have to be that nice. She's not nice back. So you should stay here because this party's for you. And she'll get over it.
I hate that shit. I hate it.
And I was like, and he was pretty straightforward with her there. It was like, did I invite any of them? And she's like, well, but I was just trying. And he's like, did I invite them? And she's like, no. And he's like, yeah, exactly. So now I'm going to go help a friend because she needs help. And you can stay with the party and kick them all out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Deb. See, here's the thing. People utilize, they weaponize kindness in a way to get what they want. That's the kind of person that Deb is portraying. That's a real type of person out in the world where their excuse for everything is like, I was just trying to be nice. But it's not a universal understanding of nice. It's their own personal view of what nice means. It's what they would want in that situation. Like if I was home alone with a broken foot, I would want you to bring all my friends to my house and have a party. Okay, but not everybody is you. And then you don't get to hide behind rudeness, like hide behind I'm being nice, but actually acting. You don't get to act rude and then hide behind the excuse, especially women. This is truly, I think, a phenomenon is gendered in a way. I think a lot of women, and I'm going to say it, church women, people who have grown up in a very insular community and especially gone to a religious institution where this is what's taught, this is the behavior that is taught. Mm-hmm. You are taught to grow up to be this kind of wife, mother, homemaker, this kind of community person. Like your outreach, you take food to the sick, you take the elderly to get groceries. Like all of those in and of themselves are good things. Mm-hmm. If the person you're doing the thing for asks for it or has accepted it, has said, yes, I want this kind of treatment. If you are pushing yourself onto somebody who has told you no, has indicated in any way, shape, or form that they are not comfortable with this, that they do not want this, then just because society in your eyes has deemed you to be in the right because you're being nice, doesn't mean you should keep doing it.
Right.
You can still be wrong, even if you're being quote unquote nice.
That doesn't make you right just because you're being nice. No. Like that doesn't put you on the right side of whatever. If that person is not welcoming your quote unquote niceness or they're just not interested, then you fucking walk away. Mm-hmm. They have that right to not be interested.
Well, and especially if it requires more work out of them than they like. It's one thing to just like drop off a casserole and be like, hey, I heard you had a broken foot. Here's a casserole.
Yeah.
And then you walk away. That didn't require much of the person. So even if like, let's say they didn't ask for it and they're not super thrilled about having your casserole, maybe it's a tuna noodle casserole and I don't eat fish and I don't want tuna noodle in my house. I will still be like, oh, that was very kind. Thank you.
Thank you.
In the future, I don't eat fish. Right. And then I'll feed my dog tuna noodle casserole.
And he'll be happy.
And he'll be fine. But if the favor that you're doing requires them to be put out in more, like, because she never just stopped by with the lasagna. She stopped by with the intent of like, she even went so far as to quote, hint that she could help him bathe.
Oh, yeah.
That, oh, I know how hard it can be with like a broken foot to get a full bath in. But,
oh, and my it's like, God.
Bitch. Calm your tits. This boy didn't even ask for you to come over and you're talking about bathing him. You guys haven't. He said maybe 5 words to you in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And you just straight up suggested that you help him bathe. Like, you need to notch it back a couple of fucking notches. Like,
I mean, after the first couple of times where he is like, no, I'm cool, I don't think you then continue to offer these type of services to him, especially like to bathe him and stuff. Cook him the casserole and then walk away. That's nice. That's great. And doing that after he's obviously showing you that he is not interested. Because if he was interested, you would know. But she just keeps going and going for it. I don't understand that type of mentality. To me, that's when you just keep pushing for something after somebody obviously is not either comfortable or they don't want to do it. And you just keep going. I can't understand it. And I hate her for it. She's a terrible character.
She's like up there with Umbridge in terms of literary evil characters. Which anybody else who reads this book is going to be like, that's you're ridiculous, Kalina. She's not nearly as bad as Umbridge was literally torturing children. And I'm like, yeah.
She was the worst.
But Deb sucks.
I mean, Deb sucks. Dove sucks. Yeah.
And she uses fucking tears as a weapon. Like, she started crying when he was telling her he didn't want that party. And that's fucking weaponizing your emotions against a person who you know can't say no. Like, especially against a man, especially it's like somebody who's as openly nice as he is. Like, that's going to tear him up that he's being rude.
Yeah.
And so it is weaponizing. You're not really sad. You're embarrassed because you just got called out for doing a thing that you shouldn't have done, which is throw a fucking party at his house without telling him as a surprise. And instead of reacting like a functioning adult and going, I am sorry, this was overstepping, I will move everybody out now and I won't ever do anything like this again, she started crying because that's a technique that gets you out of trouble. And a lot of women, again, in church groups have learned this. And I say that, I'm saying that because, like, if, okay, I'm throwing all churches under the bus with this one. I'm not a religion fan, obviously, but it's really, if you watch like any TikToks or anything and you're watching like this trad wife phenomenon that's coming around and like all of these are coming out of very Christian insular circles of like the way feminism is meant to be. Like it happened recently. There was a big brouhaha about it after the State of the Union because Katie Britt did the rebuttal. And the way she speaks, there's a certain voice. There's a voice that's taught in church. I mean, it's not like taught, like they don't sit you down and teach you it, but you will hear other women do it and you pick it up. Like, this is the way women express, especially women who've grown up in this kind of closed Christian belief systems, are taught to emote because it pulls on those levers, the only levers of power open to them, right? And so she was using, Katie Britt in that instance was using it when she would talk about like my immigrants, you know, immigration and like how people are dying and we're letting they call them animals across our border and all this. And she was using that particular voice. And then there was all of these articles and like TikToks for people who had gotten, like women who have gotten out of the church, who are like, that is the voice. That's the voice you learn. And it's the voice you're taught because that's how you get what you want. Within this structure. Because as a woman, you don't have power within the church system. But you have a little bit in little areas, and it's that voice.
Yeah.
And it's like makes your kids do things. It's how you explore a little bit of power. It's a power dynamic. And so I kept seeing that when I was reading about Deb. Because I'm just like, this woman is trying to manipulate everyone around her to doing what she wants. This book isn't even about Deb, and we've talked about Deb for probably 30 fucking minutes. We need to move on.
I mean, we can go on forever about how Deb sucks how much Cheryl sucks. And so does the mom, his mom sucks too. But let's, okay, if we're going to move on.
Pick another topic.
Let's talk about their first quote unquote sex.
Okay.
After the wedding. So this is after fucking Maggie almost beats the shit out of Cheryl, which I really wish would have happened. And this is, he takes her to the dance floor. Aiden takes her to the dance floor to calm her down. And he's like, I'm fucking in love with you. That was the hottest thing I've ever seen. I know for sure that I am attracted. And this is all inside his head, right? But they start to express it and they talk about it. And then he's just finally just like, can I kiss you? And so he kisses her on the dance floor. And it's everybody's watching, of course. And it's like a really good, hot, steamy kiss. And then they take it up to the hotel room. But they don't have condoms. But they're having a conversation as they're like making out and taking off clothes. And like, they're having so much fun with this first encounter together. And I it's so endearing. It was just such a sweet interaction between the two. It's
one of the best.
It's so good.
Because like, it's later in this book. I mean, you have to go through a lot with these characters before we get anything, even remotely. Like that kiss, it came out, like 5-6 hours in to a book that's only like, what? I don't know.
Eight hours. Well, I think it's 500 speed, so. Yeah.
In reality, but we don't listen to it normal style. No. So yeah, it's like 10, and I feel like that was maybe, it was even further in than that then. I think it was at maybe 7 hours.
I think so.
And I think there's only like two or 3 hours left.
Yeah, there was very little bit left, but they're talking and flirting, and it's
so good because I think it's exactly what a real, like, grown-up adult later in life interaction.
Yeah. Should be,
like, and for both of them, with all of their history, like, he hasn't had sex with another person in over 10 years. Because the last one he was seeing was Cheryl when they were engaged. And even then, he said that he had stopped being interested in her sexually because of how strained their relationship had become and how she really was a different person than they had fallen in their first initial love in high school. Like, they were high school sweethearts. Yeah. Like, that's a difference. And, you know, they ran into each other after college and started up again. But you're different people then, you know? And
oh, yeah.
And he hadn't really seen it at the beginning because he was heartbroken about Jordan. And so he was excited to have those feelings for somebody because he didn't know that he'd have them again. And he still had them for Cheryl. And so he was excited by that. And it worked out well in the beginning. But then everyone was pressuring him to marry her. And he was just like, this isn't, like, she isn't the same person and he's not the same person, and he didn't feel the same anymore. So he'd started coming up with excuses to not even go to bed with her.
Yeah.
To, like, work late or, like, sleep in another room and all this stuff. And so it had been a long time since, because then after the whole Cheryl debacle, he didn't see anyone after that.
Right.
And for Maggie, it had just been really her husband. She had apparently two experiences beforehand, one in high school, one in college.
And then
her husband, and they were married, and then they'd been on the outs for quite a while, leading to their eventual divorce, and then that was 5 years ago. So both of these people have been out of the quote-unquote game for a long time, and now it's all of a sudden, like, they're both like, I kind of think I'm interested, and I kind of really want to fuck you.
And it's so, I think what I love most about this whole thing is that they're older. So these are the oldest characters we've had in any of the books we've read. You know, Maggie's 48, he's 49.
We've had some, like, couple hundred-year-old vampires and shit.
I mean, that's so true. With 30-year-old bodies. But that's what makes it so, I think, one of the most enticing things about it. It's the realism and the connection that we have as real people to the characters, right? And then you're always imagining yourself as the character, the main characters. And so you're in this hotel room and you're having fun with this fucking silver fox. And he is hot and he wants you. And of course, you want him and you start making out and you do the thing, but then you get inside your head, right?
Oh, yeah.
She gets super insecure. She wants to turn the lights off. She wants to close the curtains. And he's like, no, I don't want you. I'm enjoying you. I want to see your body. And at the same time, they're, you know, like, she wants to be really conscious about how he feels with his sexuality and his body, while at the same time he does with for her as well. Because, you know, obviously she's got some insecurities, but they both make it through. And then they're like, fuck, we don't have any condoms. And so they dry hump for their first interaction, and it's so hot. I love it so much because I know you're not a kissing person, but I am a kissing person, and they make out like teenagers. And of course, that's the thing you do when you don't have condoms, right? If you're responsible, right?
Sure. Sure.
You don't do the sex.
Don't listen to me because that's not my path. Right. But these are more responsible adults than I am, so.
Right. So they're like, let's just keep our clothes on and dry hump each other. And they totally do. And then they talk all night. They fall asleep. Like, it's just a really good interaction, fun. It's still sexy, even though there was, like, no penetration. There wasn't any foreplay either. But they talked to each other. He's like, well, so I've got fingers, I've got a mouth, I've got, you know, like, how do you want it? And she's like, oh, okay.
So
it's just so cute. I love it so much.
It was so good. And it does remind you that, like, dry humping is fun.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
And eventually they do ask for condoms from the hotel that they deliver, like, super late.
Like, an hour later, and they're both like, we're old.
They're like, yeah. He's like, it's going to take me some time to, you know, recover from this and start again. She's like, I'm not worried about that. It's all good. Oh, but it's good. And then I don't remember how she gets home. How does she get home?
She drives herself. She drove herself there.
Oh, that's
there.
Right. She drove her. He drives his mom home. That's when she disowns him because she's like super shitty to him.
She's a really about this fucking whole thing. Terrible fucking person.
And so then he's just like, you know, fuck it. I need to go be with Maggie. She's all I think about. She's all I want to be around. And so he goes there and he's like, oh, I might have swiped one of the condoms from the hotel room. And then they fuck for the first time in her house. She's like, let's do this. Let's do it. And then, you know, of course, the next morning he makes pancakes, and that's when Kit shows up with his dad and things happen. Yeah. Well, things don't happen. She's essentially, you got to leave. I need to fix this for myself.
And she does. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that needed to happen. It wasn't the right time. It was a little early still for him to be there to be supportive. But yeah. I get, like, he was like, this, I'm going to do it because she's telling me to. But I know that she's just too afraid to ask for the support she needed. Mm-hmm. But he left. He did. And she did. She held her own, and she didn't fly off the handle. She was pretty reasonable in that moment, which is pretty impressive, because I have to say I would have been less reasonable. But
I felt like she was sort of holding back because she was trying to be good for Kit, even though she was
of course upset and she him. Needed to, well, I mean, she had every right to be upset, but finding that middle ground of still having a, you know, her ex had no right to be in that house, and to mm-hmm. pretend to like have these, like to show up and be like, well, there was a strange car in your driveway, so I cared. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Again, they've been separated for 5 years. I don't buy that fucking for 1 second mm-hmm. that you thought something bad had happened to me and you just happened to catch the guy. Like, right. If it was bad, why would the car still be there? Like, if I'd been murdered, wouldn't I just be a dead person in the house? Like, why, right. You know, you're magically showing up at exactly the right time to catch my murderer before he flees the scene. Like, it's just a bunch of stupid shit.
Yeah, no, it's just excuses. And she finds, I can't remember the exact line that she said, but there was something that she said to, and I don't, he's obviously the only name I don't remember is the ex-husband.
Trey or Trev, one of the two.
Trev. Yeah, Trev, I think. And there was a line that she said to him during this conversation that I was just like, yes, that's fucking true. And it was about him trying to rekindle his relationship with Kit. Mm-hmm. He'd left with no contact for 5 years while this kid was, he was a teenager. Like, that's like, I mean, it's formative, bad to leave the kids mother at any time. Years. But that is when they're the most fucked up. And so, you know, and he's having a new baby with his 30-year-old wife. But Maggie is feeling like, you can't just walk in here and pretend like things are okay. No. You can't. It's not fair to him. She's really good about standing her ground and that kind of stuff. I love that she's so outspoken. She's a really strong character, but she's reasonable.
Yeah. And I think that it's because of how much shit she put up with for so long, because she thought that that was what she needed to do, that that would create a better, like, environment for Kit. Like, she's like, I just gotta try. Yeah. And eventually, like, as soon as you run out of your rope, you know, or your fuse, like, everyone's like, oh, I have a pretty long fuse. But when it's fucking out, it's out. Oh, yeah. And she's like, she's out. She's done with mm-hmm. Trev. She's like, he has no business. Like, he can still have a really, especially now that Kit is grown and a technical yep. adult. You have every availability to have a relationship with him. It doesn't have to be done at the house with Maggie.
Right.
Okay. She's like, I never wanted mm-hmm. you to not have a relationship with him. You're the one that disappeared for 5 fucking years.
Yeah.
But if you want to have one, then have one. Do not, I like the line where she was like, do not show up until your new son is the perfect age to replace Kit and become right. become the toxic masculine piece, you know, like yep. kid you never got with Kit. Like, if you pull this string and then you give up on him as soon as you have a replacement, that she's like, I will kill you. And you need she's to like, take
I will
this
you and I will kill
seriously, because I'm not joking. I'll kill you. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's having a little girl, so it's going to, you know, be okay. But I think that was a legitimate fear, was that he was just going to play nice with his adult son until... Mm-hmm. He could make a better one.
Yep. Ugh, that's infuriating.
Yeah, that guy sucked hardcore.
Everybody sucked.
They all hardcore. Did. Everybody was the worst. Except for the two main characters. They were fun.
Except for the two. They were so fun, especially when they were having the sex. But hey, that reminds me. Let's get into our kiss and tell.
Okay.
Do you want to introduce sure. it to everyone?
So obviously, these are two older characters. And there's one point where Aiden is talking about being in a relationship at this age and deciding, you know, like, it's not the angsty, fumbly stuff of emotional stuff of your teens. And it's not even the like mid to late 20s looking to follow this socially prescribed path of marriage and children and everything that like kind of comes out of that. And there's something very freeing about dating at this age as an older person and just knowing that there's not all of this social pressure, like that you're not trying to have kids. You're not, there's no deadline. There's no path to walk that has been socially prescribed and you have to follow. And like everyone's trying to find that same path. As long as you're dating like open-mindedly with the people who you are looking at, like it's very freeing because all of a sudden it's just about two people finding out if they like each other and spending time with each other. Mm-hmm. And there's not all this other like shit. And so we're going to talk about that because obviously I'm closest to their age and being in a similar situation. Like I don't have the historical baggage that either of them have. Well, I guess he never got married. I guess I could be like Aiden, I guess.
You could be Aiden.
But
sure.
Yeah. And then this like there is something like dating can still suck. Like obviously the process of finding people to date and like it's not getting better. People are
people are people,
but also I just really do think we all are really still very, very traumatized from COVID without having done any of the work to understand it. Like, people are not okay. People are not okay.
We are not.
But there is just a nice, like, really easygoing aspect to it where I, like, you know, like Maggie, I don't give a fuck. Like, if we're talking and it's fun and we get together and we hang out or we go on dates and then it's not fun, bye. And I do try to be nice and try to, you know, to explain that or tell it, but I've had a few that I've straight ghosted, and I know ghosting's not the greatest, but here's the thing. If I'm catching shit from you, if I'm catching fucking guilt fucking trips from you, from somebody I've seen in person twice.
Yeah.
Oh, no, 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 no.
We don't play these games.
I had enough guilt trips growing up from people in my life, like people who are still attempting to give me guilt trips who I've fucking cut out of my life. And I'm just like, no, I am definitely not taking it from somebody who I've, met in person twice and like talked to for a couple of months. Like that does not deserve a response. Like I will just drop you and it will be a ghost situation. And you can be hurt about that. And then I will block your number and block you in the app. So
yeah, that's right.
So I like it. It's definitely the best I felt dating in at any different point in my life.
Yeah, like absolutely. I mean, they talk about in this book that there's less pressure. Like you're old enough to not to have to deal with that pressure.
Exactly. Like every time I tried to date in my 20s, I was just because I always knew. I knew for so long that I was not having kids. I didn't want them. I do not want to have children. And in your 20s, that is not believed very much. Like there's just a whole lot of you'll change your mind. You'll meet the right person. Yes. And some, you know, not that everybody is telling you that, but enough people are telling you that. It's in the zeitgeist. It's in society. And so you're having these conversations with somebody and you can just tell that the assumption is we're dating with these end goals of marriage and possibly children. And maybe we'll change our minds and have kids and all of that. And I just knew the whole time. So I never really let that guard down in my 20s because I knew I had to protect the fact that I was just never going to have kids. And I didn't trust that the people I was dating understood that.
Right.
Because sometimes people will say one thing, but then they get... They have another
they start having ideas.
Face underneath that face.
Yeah. Like their true intentions start to surface.
Yeah.
And they think that they could either pull you along or convince you otherwise.
Exactly. And so there was that. And I even if that's not true, like I could be projecting a lot onto my past partners and that wasn't really there. I had a fear of it. So even if it wasn't real, my fear was that I'd end up in a relationship with somebody who I thought was on the same page. And then all of a sudden they wouldn't be. And they'd want something that I was never going to give them. Or I'd somehow, unbeknownst to me, not unbeknownst, but somehow against my better judgment, get talked into a choice that I would regret for the rest of my life. Like if I really fell hard in love with somebody, there's definitely a period of time where like my self-esteem wasn't that high. If I was in head over heels love and someone wanted mm-hmm. to talk me into, I maybe could have been talked into having a child. And then I would have been pissed. Oh, yeah. I'd have been pissed at myself. Then you would have had that
lifetime at forever. Them. Yeah.
I mean, it would have just really upset me forever because that's not what I want. I knew it. I knew it in my core. And so I think I protected myself by not just making that, just taking it off the table, not dating that mm-hmm. much anyway, just kind of like hands off dating at arm's length.
Yeah.
But now that I'm older, I mean, I obviously accidental pregnancy could happen, but no one's going to try. Like, I'm not going to get tricked into it at fucking 42. Like, that's not going to accidentally happen. And I won't, you know, I'm stronger in myself. Like,
yes.
God, I know everyone always says it. Adults always say it. And it's hard to believe when you're young, when you're in your teens and your 20s. But life really does just get better, like, the older you get.
Yeah. It really does. And a lot of people say it's because of confidence, and that might be. But I also think it's, I don't give a shit.
It's, like, I don't give a shit.
I don't care about how you think, what you think of me, how you feel, and how you think I should be living my life. I do not give a shit.
I don't care. And
I care none.
Just, it's so liberating. I was actually yes. very afraid that I wouldn't get the I don't care, because I always associated it with mothers, because I felt like mm-hmm. the act of going through a pregnancy, you really come out the other side like, I don't give a flying fuck, because you just had to grow a whole person and then all of this shit happened to you. And so by the time you're at the other end, you're just like, fuck it, I don't care anymore.
Fuck it.
And, and so I was like, man, I'm not going to have kids. Am I going to get to the point where I'm going to be all nice, adult, cool, like not giving a fuck? And guess what? It shows up even if you don't have kids.
It shows up no matter what, because guess what? People are going to throw shit at you no matter what. It doesn't matter what you do, especially as a woman. If you're, you get it if you're a mother. You get it if you're not a mother. You get it just for being. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. It'll come at you 5 different ways a day.
Yep.
But
very true. And so it's very nice to like wake up and all of a sudden be like, all I have to do is be happy with myself. If I am making choices that make me happy and that I know I'm living a good life that mm-hmm. is not harming anyone, that mm-hmm. I'm not like, you know, using and manipulating anybody else, then that's fine. And so, and it's coming out in my dating. It's very liberating. Like, it was hard at first. It was like, oh, this is stupid. And it is stupid. You're going to have dumbass conversations with stupid people. Sure. And you're going to get frustrated. And somebody is going to guilt trip you about some shit. And you're going to be like, feel bad at first. And you're going to be like, oh no, I'm sorry. And then you're like, I have really paired down. Like, I've worked really hard to not type the word I'm sorry to a man. I just am fucking, I'm not sending them those words. I'll be like, anything else I will try and send. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I'm not going to apologize because I have nothing to apologize for in this. I haven't done them harm. Emoji. I haven't done harm. So I don't get to apologize. I'm not apologizing. So I'm working on that.
Dying.
Did I murder you? No. Okay. Then fuck yeah. Yeah. You're you know, right. You didn't hear from me when you thought you were going to, or I didn't respond as fast as you wanted me to.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Whatever. Fuck off. Anyway. So I'm working on that, and it's really nice. It's very nice.
Yeah.
So, and I'm currently talking with a man who is 50. So, you know, he seems to be at the no fucks place too. And I'm like, good on you.
Look at that. And I hope that, I'm like, there's a message in this book, and Aiden talks about it. You know, once he got older, he realized that he didn't have to be who his partner wanted him to be.
Oh, right.
And I hope that that starts a lot sooner for more people. It doesn't have to start when you're in your late 40s or your late 30s. It should start sooner. You got to be yourself all the time. And if people can't accept you for who you are, then fuck it.
Exactly. Fuck them. I mean, it is hard to get to that place. Like, it definitely takes really work. Hard. And I think that's why Aiden had just avoided the thing entirely. Not just his sexual orientation, which is, you know, naturally inclined.
But he also didn't understand that.
He didn't understand it. But that just makes him naturally inclined to not have that many attractions mm-hmm. anyway. But he worked to avoid relationships also because I think his past too, he had been being a person he wasn't true to himself. Right. And so it's just easier to not be with anyone so you don't have to fake something.
Yeah.
Cat is very aggressive.
Oh, I forgot you have a cat in the house now. I thought I heard a cat. Yeah. I thought it was Sauce.
Nope, it's Riley. Riley's making herself known.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, so, I mean, I know you're not dating in your late 40s, but that one's no, that was but just I a kiss am... and tell for me.
That's totally fine. I imagine that if that ever happens to me, this book is going to be my life because I'm going to get back into video games eventually.
You will definitely become the...
It just might happen.
The five-year, like, hermit that Maggie was. Yes. Until your kids are grown, and then you'll be like... Then we'll have to, like...
Yeah, you'll have to pull me out of my funk. But I'll allow you guys to do it because you guys aren't asshole friends. No. And you guys are true friends.
Well, and I wouldn't push any of that bullshit on you. I'd be like, fuck it.
But I she's way braver than me, though. I know that there was... like a 2-degree separation of the people that she knew. So this person was known to somebody she knows. But it was still really scary for her to like show up.
That's so funny to me because I was like, this doesn't like, feel scary at all. You live in literally a small town. You got this person's name through a church group.
Yes.
I don't know who you think he's going to end. Like, I have shown up on dates and to people who I have way less connection and proof that they're not a serial killer than she had.
Right. She had none. She had him completely, like, wrong, mapped out.
Well, she had him wrong, but still, like, people knew she had been connected to him. Like, I mean, I was like, you're not going to get murdered in this situation. This is so funny that she started freaking out at the end. Like, after already going, that's when she's freaking.
Yeah. She's like, She's, like, in his house putting pho on the stove. Yeah. Just know that if I date later on in my life, it'll be me and my toys and video games.
Yep. That's the other benefit of being older and cool. You don't need men for much because toys are pretty damn...
Toys are amazing.
Pretty damn amazing.
Dick is nice, but toys are amazing, too. So...
there's a certain skin to skin that's very it's healthy too. It's really healthy to get and it's, you know, going 10 years without it for Aiden, that's a long fucking time. Like I've had really my stretches of celibacy where I go like I think 4 was my max, 4 years between people, and then but that's it, like once you start getting that skin contact again, you're like, oh, this does do things. Like it's an endorphin thing that you can't get from really any toy.
Yeah, you can't. Even if it's a dildo, it's not the same.
No, that's not the same as like full body, like chest, skin to skin.
All right. Well, do you have a fun fuck fact for us?
I do. So yes, so because we learned a lot of new terms and new things in this book, I thought I would share with everyone a website to help define different types of sexual attraction, behavior, and orientation. So this is from healthline.com, and it is called 47 Terms That Describe Sexual Attraction, Behavior, and Orientation. It's medically reviewed by Jennifer Littner, PhD, LMFT, CST, and it's written by Mir Abrams, LCSW. It was last updated on February 17th, 2023. It's not going to read it to you because it's just a list of words and definitions. Yeah. So it'd be weird for me to read it out loud. But I do want to say one thing because it came up in this book. So we mentioned it a couple times that Aiden is demisexual is kind of what they figured out between him and Maggie, like the term that most closely. But it's obviously it's up to people to kind of define themselves and to read the different terms and decide what really applies to them. It's not so much about somebody else labeling you. But I was very excited to read about that in the book because demi has come up a couple of times in my dating life. On these apps on Hinge, there's a place where you can put your orientation and people will list demi. And I've seen it at least 4 or 5 times that men have listed demisexual as their orientation. And every time I see it, I look it up. And every time I look it up, I read the very dry definition that this article will give you, which I'll just go to that one. I'll read that one out loud. Okay. Which according, you know, to the article, demisexual on the asexual spectrum, this sexual orientation describes people who experience sexual attraction only under specific circumstances, such as after building a romantic or emotional relationship with a person. So I would read demisexual on a man's profile. I would go and I'd read that definition and I'd go, well, I mean, I understand it, but I also don't understand it. And so it wouldn't tell me much about it. Like it wasn't clear. There wasn't context. There was not enough context. I was just like, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean for you? What does it mean? Right? This book was so helpful because she writes a full-blown character and you can watch it in action. You can watch him not feeling like not seeing people at a bar and immediately going, well, that's, you know, she's attractive. He's not attractive. Riley. That's hot. That's hot. You know, mm-hmm. that's not how his feelings don't grow that way. He doesn't see a person and have an instant attraction. He gets to know people mm-hmm. for who they are. And if they are compatible at a friendship and, you know, base level, then he starts to have a reaction and an attraction to them. And so it was just really helpful to finally understand it better because of a character in a book that really right. fleshes it out and makes it a real thing that people go through. Like, I believed it. It's not like I questioned it or didn't believe people when they say that.
Sure.
But it's hard to understand because it's not me, right? So it's hard.
There's no without point of view.
Without perspective to fully, mm-hmm. I can read the sentence. I can understand the words in the sentence and the definition. But that's not the same thing as really fully grasping the concept and like understanding how it applies to people in the real world. And yes, this right. is a fiction character or a fictional book, but it's the character's so well written and it feels so realistic to actually see yeah. a person develop feelings this way where they're already mm-hmm. like halfway in love before he even thought about it, you know, because it's not a sexual attraction. It's a like person attraction. It's like being attracted to a person for who they are, not what they yes, look like and yeah. everything. So anyway, right. it's very interesting.
Yeah, because you don't during the sex scenes, you don't get full blown descriptions of what they look like at all. Like you don't get that they are muscular or really skinny or really, you know what I mean? Like you don't get those mm-hmm. descriptions, or at least if there were, I didn't catch on any of them.
I mean, well, we already had both of them pretty well described, so I guess that's probably why we didn't,
like, in the beginning.
Yeah, just like, yeah, physically, like,
he was like 6'2".
He's a giant lumberjack, like orange, like ginger furry man, mounted man, and she's a very, very tiny petite lady.
But that's it. Like, yeah, you're right. Get,
like yeah, like, because it doesn't matter
more
for either
details
of them.
Of it. Right, exactly.
She is a little bit more hung up because of all of the damage her ex did to her physically. Like, yes. not physically, he didn't abuse her, but mentally, when, you know, she gained weight after giving birth, and he was just like, mm-hmm. nothing she looked like or wore was like good enough for him. He, you know, right. He criticized her for everything. And so she had a lot more hang-ups about that than he did. Mm-hmm. She was more like, I want to, yeah, pull the blinds, turn the lights off. And he's just like, no, I'm just really into you.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay. I guess I can understand that. So yeah, we'll put that article up on our social medias this Friday so everyone else can see it if you're interested. It's got, like I said, it's 47 terms, so way more than we learned in this book, but there's definitely, I mean, I was just skimming over it and was like, whoa, I've never heard that one. Whoa, I've never heard that one. Like, just so many ins and outs and nuances that I just am not even familiar with. So, one, never think that you're going to understand it all in one go, because that's just not happening, right?
Right.
So, don't find this list of 47 and think you're going to, like, sit down and memorize it, and then you'll know everything, because you won't. And again, no. It really matters how people choose to apply it to themselves.
Exactly.
As long as you're open to listening to them and what they choose, mm-hmm. you know, to describe, to use for their own scriptors and their own orientations, then you'll be a good person who is not a shithead. Not a fucking Cheryl.
Not a fucking show. Oh, God. I hated her more than I hated Deb.
Well, no, she did way more damage. She definitely deserved more hate than Deb. Deb is a function of her environment. Deb is the way Deb is because of where she was raised and how she was raised and all of that. And while she did suck, she sucked less than Cheryl, because Cheryl was making it his problem that she had fucked up in her child, or not in her childhood, but so this is such a minor point and it only comes up in the book at the very, very, very end. But Cheryl had gone through shit in college where she got into drugs and partying and like went a little bit wild. Not unsurprising after coming from a small town with little to no freedom and then going to college in a place where she probably had a lot more freedom, because I think she went to the West Coast too of Washington, and her parents had to bail her out and they brought her home and all of this stuff. So she was quote unquote repenting. She was trying to put her life back on track after getting a little bit out of control. This cat. This cat is crazy.
That cat wants so badly.
And so
great.
And so she saw Aiden as a way of going back to before she made all of her fuck ups, going back to her high school sweetheart and her high school relationship and getting basically to push redo on her life and erase all of that shit that she went through in college as if it hadn't happened. And right. then when it didn't work out that way, because he wasn't ready to just go back and be the exact same person he was in high school, and she was trying to become exactly like her parents again, which he didn't want to do anyway, then she was mad at him. And it was now his fault that she couldn't put her past behind her. And she held on right. to that for the next 10 fucking years and continuously oh my threw God. It in his face and told shit about him to his brother and probably to his nieces and to his, you know, like, that's, there's so many people who she, like, the whole fact that Davey didn't understand he hadn't seen his brother much in 10 fucking years because Cheryl wouldn't yes. let him. Anyway, Cheryl definitely was the villain of the book. Well, Cheryl and Trev. She's, Trev was the villain, too.
He didn't show up till the end, but yes, he was behind the scenes, like...
Well, he was making Maggie be the way... Maggie. Like, exactly. he was giving she Maggie was going the, through the issues did. That she was trying to fix in herself
yes.
because of mm-hmm. the way Trev made her feel about herself.
Yeah. But, all right, good. Well, yeah, I mean... Like we said at the end, they get together, they get married, and they're happy.
They're happy. And they move away from that shitty town.
And they move away. That's right.
We don't know what happens with the shitty people, but I'm sure
it's... No, but we don't want their book.
Whatever they deserved in life.
Awesome. Well, what are you giving this book then?
I'm going to give it an 8. The only reason I can't give it a perfect score is because the other characters sucked so badly that there were moments where I was like, this book is hard because that character is terrible.
Dude, I can get with that. I'm going to give this a 9 just because I have that extra love for the RPG and the video games. Like that stuff always has my heart. And I got into those scenes so well. Those were points that I completely understood. I knew the vernacular. I knew what they were talking about. I knew exactly. And those having those feelings and stuff and friends online and stuff like that. And I loved the sex. And I actually sort of maybe opposite sort of what you said, that like those characters sucked so bad that I actually liked the two main characters so much more. Not that they needed to be liked more, because they're good characters. And I loved the writing. I thought the execution was pretty smart. So I liked it.
It is good. I mean, this book was great. I really loved mm-hmm. this book. I think it is one of the most realistic views of relationships. Like I said, it really put into perspective how I don't want to move to a small town. All of these people are real fucking people. Like, I felt absolutely like every single person was real. And it was a struggle to get to that happy end at the end. But it wasn't kind of struggle that it normally is. It wasn't like they had at any point like a miscommunication that led them to behave badly towards each other.
Oh, yeah.
It was all in this external bullshit that was like mm-hmm. they had to work through before they could be cool. But I'm going to stick with my 8 because I liked it. And I definitely want to read a lot more by Kathy. Right? That's her name?
Kathy Yardley. Yep.
She's fun. Mm-hmm. This was a fun book. And she's a very realistic writer. Like, she made this all... I love how our last book, you said, was all angst-filled. I feel like this book gave me way more angst than the last book.
This one had angst in it, for sure, too.
Because it was like... I mean, I knew they were going to end up together, but I was just like, that last scene... When Trev showed up, I'm just full on bawling. And Aiden's last showdown with his family was so emotional. And he needed to get there so badly. And it was so hard to have both of those women just be like, but it is your fault.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely is. Or the point, like, in the middle of the book where Maggie starts to figure out her feelings for him and she wants to kiss him. But then he's like, do you want to go to a wedding with me? And she's like, oh, I really am just his friend type of, you know. And so, like, that was heart-wrenching.
That was.
So, yeah, it's all over this book, which is good. And that is extra why I like it, too.
Love it.
Yeah. Awesome. So for our next book, guys, we are going to be reading Chasing Goldie by Holly Robards. It's the number 2 book in the Lost Girls series. We read
Tasting Red. Tasting.
Thank you. Tasting Red. Something. I knew it was about red. And we actually interviewed Holly on that episode. So we decided to jump back in.
That was episode 137 for everybody.
Awesome.
Yep.
She was fun. Holly was
so much fun.
Holly was fun.
And it'll be like, I know you guys won't hear it for a long time, but we're going to get to meet her at Readers Take Denver, which is next week for Yay. Us.
Holy shit, I forget it's next
week. It's next fucking week.
It goes by so fast.
I know. So that's we're very awesome.
So excited. We're excited to meet her, and if anything fun comes up, we'll let you guys know. But other than that, hope you it's an eyeball read. If you guys wanna dig into the book before we talk about it, please do that.
Yeah. Read it. We're pretty excited for it because we really liked Taste of Red, and I just have a feeling I'm going to be very into the bear that Goldie meets.
You know.
Because I have a thing for bears.
Yep, you sure do. And I mean, I love this bear. I've already finished it because I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to, and I fucking love it. It's going to be good.
Oh, good. Okay. I haven't even started it yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us on social media at Dirty Books on Instagram and Facebook, or you can reach out to us on email. We are dirtybooks@gmail.com. And in all those places, we are with three H's.
And you can visit us on our website at dirtybooks.com and most places that you can find podcasts. You guys can go there, rate, review, subscribe. That'd be great. Thank you so much for the music, Jim Townsend. With that, we'll say goodnight. This is Selah.
And this is Kalina.
And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Selah. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Get some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format, allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.